Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee back into order here. We recessed this morning after the forecast. We've got a bunch of changes to the agenda. It's not nearly as ambitious as we had hoped. We are going to postpone or carry over the public hearing on Senate Bill 1532 until Friday's meeting, and it's possible it'll get carried over beyond that, but we'll have it on Friday if we need it. We are going to carry over till Friday the Senate Bill 1534, correct? Because we're lacking a fiscal on one of the amendments. And so we will start today by opening a work session on Senate Bill...
Not on any of them.
Senate Bill 1535.
Members of the committee, the Senate Bill 1535, you heard last time he was here, and we decided to wait for and give a chance for the fiscal to be reviewed, and I think that's what we ended up. This is to refresh your memory about the state treasurer kind of improving the language that it was in a different bill last session, and the language needed to be fixed. This is the error and omissions one.
Okay. We have somebody from the Treasurer's Office, I'm sure, here, in case we have technical questions. Well, I guess we don't. So it's up to Mazin. Do we have amendments here, Mazin?
No, Madam Chair. I think this looks like that's what they think is needed.
Okie dokie. May I ask my honorable vice chair for a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill, Senate Bill 1535 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 1535 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Hess, would you like to carry this?
Yeah.
It's revenge time. Okay. Okay. Now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1541.
Chairman, Chair, members of the committee.
Senate Bill 1541 is basically extending the, reinstating the tax credit for crop donation as in ORS 315.156. The bill would also increase the percentage of the wholesale price that's allowed as a tax credit amount from the original 10% to 15%, and the tax years that would be applicable for this tax credit would be from on or after January 1, 2014 through January 1, 2020.
Okay, committee, we had a lot of testimony. We had two public hearings on this bill. Do you have any questions before we ask for a motion? Okay, Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1541 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 1541 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry this unless someone has a burning desire to do it. Okay, now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1528. You know how the motion works for Ways and Means. Make sense to the floor with a due pass recommendation and to the Ways and Means by prior report or prior. No, I think we have to. It's 1528.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1528 is about long-term care and treatment program, education program. You have in front of you dash one amendment that changes the weight from 3 to 2. So long-term care and treatment program will be funded by state school fund, formula revenue distribution. And the bill also the amendment specifies that the general fund portion of LTCT funding, which is about $7.4 million for 14-15, be sent to the state school fund so that could be part of revenue distribution. So as it is written, the program actually will be funded less than 13-15 appropriation. So that's where it stands. The amendment reduces the weight to 2 from 3 in the original.
But, well, it funds it less than the original bill, but yes, not less than current funding.
For 14-15, actually, in fact, just preliminary analysis shows that the program will be getting less money for 14-15 altogether, a little bit.
Less than what?
Than the legislatively approved budget or program support of general fund and state school fund, which is about $34 million. For 14-15, it's about, it should be about half of it, but then with the weight of 2 at this point, the program will be getting less fund for 14-15.
Under the formula, but the appropriation that we're putting in there will actually increase the funding, as I understand it, for the next year, for the 14-15 year, over current law, because that funding disappeared under current law, and we're putting it back in. Is that your understanding?
The Ashon Amendment doesn't take care of additional support at this point. So it accomplished a couple of things. One, LTCT will be funded solely through formula revenue distribution. For 14-15, the program was supposed to get $7.4 million from the general fund. Mm-hmm. The intro and the Dashon amendment calls for this 7.4 to be sent to the state school fund. So with the weight of 2, based on interaction, based on a conversation with ODE, the program is in a position actually to lose about $1.3
million. Okay. From lose $1.3 million from what? From this year?
For 14-15, actually. The
lose it from what? What's the base?
Okay, the base line? Is 13-15 approved budget.
Okay. All right.
So relative to that, for 14-15, the program is in a position at this point to lose 1.3.
Okay. As you can tell, this is a way more complex issue than any of us even thought in our worst nightmares. So what I'm going to ask the committee to do, they had several objections bringing this forward. One is to get into the school formula. One was to get more equality between residential and non-residential programs, and the other was to add resources to an underfunded program. But another objective was also to get this whole issue presented to the attention of the task force that is currently working on the school funding formula. I don't like to send bills out of this committee that are not in ship shape. This bill is not in ship shape. What we are doing here is we have taken our best shot at trying to accomplish some of the objectives that were brought to us. This is an imperfect bill. This bill belongs in a much larger discussion over the school funding formula and how individual programs within that formula, whether it be special ed or ESL or this population, how they ought to be treated. It's a much bigger discussion than we can have here in a short session in the Senate Revenue Committee. But I feel that we would benefit the issue by moving it forward and moving it into the proper arena. So what I would ask the committee's indulgence is to go ahead and send this on to the Ways and Means Committee. And I've already talked to the chair of the subcommittee and the co-chair of the Ways and Means Committee. They know that they've got something coming that it does not meet, that does not reflect the kind of compromises and the kind of decision-making that we expect from a final bill. And they are they're comfortable with that. So with that, I would open the committee to the questions, if you have any. And Senator George.
So if we adopt the Dash 1 amendments, we'll send it to Ways and Means, correct?
Correct.
And could we send it there since it's not a perfect bill yet? Sorry, can we send it with no recommendation?
We could do that, yes.
Okay.
If people are comfortable.
Because that might make everybody on the committee feel more comfortable that it's a work in progress.
It is important to get the Dash 1 amendment in, though. So, Senator George, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1528, dated February 7th, 2014.
Senator George has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1528. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator George.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1528 as amended by Dash 1 amendments to the floor with a subsequent... with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means with a neutral or a...
No recommendation. Senator George has moved Senate Bill 1528 with no recommendations to the floor with a subsequent referral to... with a prior referral to Ways and Means Committee. Was I close enough on that, Dr. Warner? The motion is on the floor. Senator Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate being able to help this population and move things forward, but I think this points out the need, number one, the importance of this task force or getting some recommendations to give the formula an overhaul, because it is just such a beast to deal with when you're dealing with a small segment of people or small segment of kids. You can't do it one at a time very easily, as we're seeing here, even though everybody, I think, has the best of intention here. And so the task force and the recommendations, and hopefully that come out as a result, and then this next legislative session, it will be on us to deal with the formula in a way that allows for adjustments to be made without everybody catching on fire in trying to get these things changed.
Yeah. I might add that, and thank you for those comments, Mr. Education Committee Chair. We appreciate having you on this committee. And I might add that I don't think we've taken a serious look at the formula since probably the 99 legislative session. I see nodding heads. With that, is there further discussion on the motion? Okay. Any objection? So ordered. Off it goes. Okay. Now we will, as soon as I can figure out here. Oh, there we go. Okay, now we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1568. Dr. Warner.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we just contacted Senator Edwards' office, and he'll be down shortly. He's the sponsor of the bill. The bill removes the Department of Revenue's authority to assign tax debt to private collection agencies. That's the pretty straightforward wording in the bill. Just a couple of things by background. Prior to 1999, agencies were kind of at their discretion how they used private collection agencies. In 99, the legislature passed a bill in 99 that directed the Department of Revenue to begin sending non-exempt debt to personal collection agencies if they're more than a year past. So it goes back to that 99 legislation. The Ways and Means Committee in the 13 session did approve a budget note and directed the Department of Revenue to provide background information and assessment, evaluation, and description of what they've done in terms of using private collection agency. That is in your OLIS packet, that budget note that just came out from DOR in January. And Deanna Mack is here if there's any questions about that. And I see that Senator Edwards is here.
Senator Edwards has arrived in the room, and I now call you up to the dais.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris Edwards, State Senator in Eugene and Junction City. Thank you for hearing this bill today. I'd like to give you a little bit of background and what I believe to be a problem, and how I envision, and hopefully with the cooperation of other legislators and the chair, we might be able to continue to flush this issue out. The bill, Senate Bill 1568, on its face is very simple. As you know, though, complex problems aren't always best served by very simple solutions, and I recognize that. The bill prohibits the use of private collection agents to collect tax debts. After our budgetary, in the 2013 session, we gave the department budgetary and legislative edict to beef up collections, tax collections. And at the time, I had expressed privately, and now I wish I would have done so publicly, about my concerns ahead of time that when we talk in simple sound bites about going out and going after quote-unquote tax cheats to get the money that's owed to the state of Oregon, while it may seem like the low-hanging fruit in terms of increasing revenue to the state, and many of us are of the opinion that the state needs a lot more revenue to adequately fund the services that we think important, and I've been very public in my feelings about that. I do believe that in talking about this, we have not given enough concern as to how that net is cast on just ordinary Oregonians and how entangling that net can be. So I have had constituent cases since we took that legislative action that have demonstrated department action or third-party collection agent action that to me didn't appear to be fair in terms of the process rights that are granted to Oregonians trying to defend themselves, or were just downright overly aggressive and kind of mean on the part of some agents. So I don't think it serves the public interest well for the state of Oregon, even when we're collecting debt. And of course, that's not a really warm and fuzzy conversation when you're going to somebody to express, notify them that you believe they owe more money. And of course, they're naturally going to be not too excited to hear that message. So it has the potential to be a naturally contentious relationship right from the beginning. But I don't believe that it is in the state's best interest to not really carefully examine how we do this, what the process looks like. Are people doing this work? Do they have the right amount of training? And are we considering what type of what type of culture we want in the department and how we want to represent the state. I don't think it's in anybody's best interest to turn otherwise, people that are otherwise very supportive of our public services against the state over these type of actions. So while my bill is very simple, Madam Chair, I recognize that it needs a lot more refinement and that the issue is a lot broader than just the use of collection agents. I think there are process issues here. I think that there are budgetary issues. There's the interface with federal issues. And I would hope that in the interim, we could convene a group that included the department, that included the Department of Administrative Services, who oversees contracts and writes the contracts with third-party collection agents, that also includes legislators, because I think legislators have a different interest in the issue, also includes employee representation, and includes the third-party collection agents themselves. I'd like to have all these people together to really go through the issue in totality and to work this through and to come back in the next legislative session with some concrete things that can or ought to happen. I do not want to just punt on the issue and then come back in the next legislative session and not really have anything teed up or any concrete action. But in a short session such as this, it needs more time to be worked through. It was one final note in investigating the issue and learning more about the issue. I've been grateful to the department and Director Buchholz for walking me through the process and telling me, explaining to me how the process works. But I have been troubled by my outreach to tax practitioners and how CPAs have been very, very reluctant to talk about the issue. And more than one CPA only really opened up to me about their clients' issues once I assured them on the condition of anonymity that they would remain out of it, and I am happy to take this issue on. I'm not going to drag their names into it. I'm not going to ask for them to come testify. Only upon giving them that assurance of anonymity did folks start to open up, tax professionals start to open up and really express it. There are some things that are broken in the process, and we do think that we could A, still increase collections, which I think is a worthy objective, but B, we can do it in a way that's more protective of people's rights. So, Madam Chair, that's why I bring the issue forward, and I hope that that you and the committee will be amenable to working on the issue in the interim.
And thank you for bringing this forward, and thank you for pointing out that this is a very broad issue. I mean, when we talk about collections, it's not just how the collections are done and the manner in which they're done, but it's also the effectiveness. And we also have some other developments out there that are relevant now, primarily the new computer system that the Department of Revenue will have, and how we can integrate effective collection policies within the new tools of the new computer system. So I think that your suggestion is timely, that we should be really thinking of this comprehensively, and the points that you made are very, very good about how these people, for better or for worse, are the face of government in a difficult situation.
Madam Chair,
Senator Hess,
it's a difficult old thread, because you have nobody likes collectors when they're coming after you, but we love them when they're going after somebody who owes us money. And so it's a tough job, and I appreciate you bringing this issue forward. So if there is something to do, we have it front and center.
Other questions, comments?
Madam Chair, and I'd just add that, I too appreciate you bringing the issue forward. I think there are a lot of different approaches you could take to this problem, and one of them would be that regardless of whether the state of Oregon farms out collections accounts from the Department of Revenue or other agencies, the debt collectors still operate, and there have been other pieces of legislation that have tried to deal with just debt collection practices generally, because there are, you know, debt collectors who do operate sort of on the margins and others that try to treat people respectfully, et cetera. So, I mean, another approach that could be taken is also to look at whether we need to set some standards for debt collectors, even when they're not working for the state of Oregon, which we could do too. So,
in another committee.
In another committee, yeah.
All right. Other questions or comments? Thank you. And thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Catherine Weber.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair George, and members of the committee, my name is Catherine Weber, and I am the CEO at the Institute for Modern Government, which is across the street at Willamette, and we're housed in the Business School or the Graduate School of Management. I sent in some written testimony. It's about a page and a half long. I won't read through it, but I'll just sum up what's in there. IMG believes that the $3 billion collection problem, which is identified in the LFO report, is complex and sophisticated, just as the senator identified in prior testimony, and that it's in current literature, research, and et cetera, we'd call it or label it a wicked problem in an area that very, very much needs to be modernized. The Institute of Modern Government, the director's offices at DOR and DAS, we know are working on solutions, and in fact we put on a symposium in November where we explored a number of the issues. The information and the complexity, et cetera, there's papers and information on our website that backs up the summary of that, and at that time legislators and people from many different organizations participated. We had 110 people or so at that conference. We believe that it's very, very important as this modernization and collection effort goes forward that we leave all the tools on the table. So we would ask you to defer action on this proposal until the various parties working on a comprehensive solution to this broad $3 billion problem have completed their research and made recommendations. And we would invite the union to join with us to see what issues they are to further explore their issues. I have talked to them a couple of times. Anyway, we believe that eliminating private collection agencies at this time will close off a tool that could be very useful in the future in collecting debt. Thank you.
Can you be more specific about what your research, where you are in your grappling with the larger problem?
Oh. Yes, it's one of these kind of long stories in process, but after the symposium, we put up a list of all of the suggestions and broke it up into different what we think were usable kinds of problems. And that is on the website, which is www.instituteformoderngovernment.org. Mm-hmm. And in it, it's a proposal to have a master committee that would then break up into small committees like we often do to take a look at the issues. We also had and still have research capacity at Willamette. The business students did a project last winter to look at, okay, what are the kinds of things that make collections work, which don't work, how do you do it? And there's a list of about 20 of those research topics which they've to some extent taken on. One of the things that happened last winter was we discovered there wasn't enough information in that old, old system to even make some basic assumptions about good debt collection, bad debt collection, how it's working. So we hope to work with them as that moves forward. Right now, or right after that proposal, Michael Jordan asked a man named John Dufresne, who had headed up at DAS a long time ago before it was discontinued, a central group that tried to organize, coordinate, and do reporting. And in fact, if you look back, it's interesting. I just saw the new LFO report for last year. And when you look at when the revenues declined, it was, if I'm reading it correctly, about the time that that office was discontinued. So what we're hoping will happen is someone will invite us to join and hopefully organize with these groups. We've got some computer technology that can help in the process that we think will be donated. And we'd love to work with whoever is interested.
Great. We've got a number of partnerships going in the legislature with Willamette, and they've often produced very good policy recommendations. So thank you. Other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you. Jim Marquis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Marquis. I'm here today representing the Oregon Collectors Association. That's an organization that I've had the privilege of representing for 38 years now. In this building and across state government.
Starting when you were in kindergarten, right?
Pardon me?
Starting when you were in kindergarten.
Before I was born, actually. Our association is a group of Oregon-domiciled collection agencies. It's a small group. We only have between 50 and 60 companies that are part of our association. My son Matt and I have lobbied these collection issues for many years here. And our Oregon collection agencies told us 16 or 17 years ago that they wanted a more active role in helping the state collect what was owed to it. So when Matt came to work for my office, the very first project I gave him was to go and inventory what was owed to the state government from the citizens of Oregon and in other states. And lo and behold, that information was nowhere to be found in state government. Department of Administrative Services had no idea. That information as to receivables from the 135 state agencies was not part of the fiscal report they gave to DAS every year. And so Matt hooked up with the Senate Budget Committee, chaired by Neil Bryant. Some of you served with Neil. And they went out with a questionnaire to all of the state agencies, and we asked for 5 years worth of information. Please give us what you started the fiscal year with in receivables, how much you added in receivables during the year, how much you collected, what your ending balance of receivables was, what are the aging of the accounts, 0 to 30, 30, 60, 60, 90, over 90, and a brief description of what the receivables were. Were they taxes? Were they fees? Were they penalties, etc.? Not one state agency could provide us 5 years' worth of information. Not one. And we got all kinds of excuses, and we got on the phone, and we called, and we hammered, and we whined, and Senator Bryant sent out letters. And eventually, we got 1 year's worth of information from all state agencies. Some of the larger state agencies actually gave us 2 years. So the total amount in 1997 that was owed to the state was $1 billion. That's $1 billion with a B. So we were very interested in keeping track of that, and we knew the executive branch needed some help from the legislative branch. And so Matt and I introduced a bill that required state agencies to report to legislative fiscal every year by October for the previous year with that same information. And then we sat down with the state agencies to negotiate what the final bill should look like. And I had to leave the room and just put Matt in charge because I was getting too angry, because the state employees that were there were telling us they couldn't age the accounts. We can't tell you how old they are because there's appeals processes and we don't know what date to use. And my answer was just pick a date, and everybody used the same date. But they wouldn't do that. We had to take the aging out. So we do have that report coming in every year, and the receivables continue to grow. And over the 16 years since we started that process, it's grown from $1 billion to $3.5 billion.
And that includes 3-year-old, that includes 16-year-old accounts?
Well, unless they were written off. Because during that 16 years, there's been a lot of debt written off. So that's a net gain after write-offs. And I can't tell you how old it is because, again, they refuse to age the accounts. But I can tell you that in 16 years, the growth of delinquent, liquidated, uncollected receivables has grown at an average rate of $156 million a year. A year. Over $300 million a biennium. How many teachers would that buy? So we sat in this building, and honestly, I don't mean to be critical of the legislature, but I think there's been a huge failing here of people burying their head in the sand and saying, I don't want to look at that. Because, frankly, the Department of Revenue, and I think it's funny that we would prohibit the Department of Revenue from using private collection agencies, the Department of Revenue is head and shoulders above all the other agencies out there in what they do in collections. And I have a client down in Springfield, a large collection agency that works every day of the week with Department of Revenue. They love Department of Revenue. Department of Revenue loves them. And they collect a lot of money for them. Other agencies hire people to do specific tasks that are unrelated to collections. And then they ask little Mary to, well, in your spare time, could you kind of collect these accounts over here? And Mary doesn't have any training in collections. And she doesn't know what good collections or bad collections are. And so we have a dismal record in these other agencies in terms of collecting these accounts. And so Matt and I introduced a bill that said, well, how about this? If you haven't gotten one payment in 1 year, you turn it over to a private collection agency. And they finally agreed to that. And then we came back with another bill because a bunch of the agencies wanted to move that time frame up to 90 days. And so we passed that bill, and you guys passed it. But we had to put in there that a state agency could get an exemption from the 90 days and go back to the 1 year if DAS approved it. Well, guess what? They all asked for exemptions, and DAS has never denied an exemption to that law. So we're really at 1 year. Now, I can tell you, I mean, I think I know something about collections, and I've lobbied them for a lot of years. And before that, I managed a small loan company, and believe me, I did collections. The best time to collect a debt is the day that it becomes due, that it first becomes due. That's the best day to collect it. And every day that goes on past that, it becomes harder to collect. And we sat in this building, and I've been in the Ways and Means Committees, and I've been in all these committees, and we argue about who is the best person to collect the debt that's 10 years old. And I submit to you, that's not the discussion we should be having. We need to get a hold of this at the front end. I always say, if you've got a water faucet turned on full blast and you're catching the water in a bucket and the bucket's about full, The answer is not get a bigger bucket, but maybe shut the faucet off. And that's what we need to do with these receivables. Because at the front end, we're not doing what we should do to collect the debts. We have people that are untrained. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know what to say to these people. And the people walk out the door, and we don't see them for months. So I was on a committee that I put together at the request of a former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to evaluate the Judicial Department's collections program. Now, I think the Chief Justice that asked me to do that had something different in mind than what we actually did, because we were pretty critical. And I spent untold hours on this committee, and I had some really good people on that committee from across the nation. I stood in Marion County Courthouse for a full day standing behind the clerks, watching them as people came out of the court with their paperwork, where they just got fined by the judge. And so here comes Mr. Smith, and he walks up to the counter, and he lays his paperwork down, and the clerk says, "Oh, Mr. Smith, the judge fined you $1,000. Can you pay all that today?" And Mr. Smith says, "Nope." "Well, can you pay it all in the next month?" "Nope." "Oh, well then, Mr. Smith, I'll have to put you on a payment plan. I can go as low as $25 a day, and I can set your first payment for 45 days from now. Is that okay?" "Sure." So she does that, and he walks out the door. She doesn't try to update the information in the file. She doesn't mention to him that they take every credit card known to man and woman. Nothing. Now, if Mr. Smith misses that first payment 45 days from now, nothing happens. 30 days after he misses the first payment, he gets a letter.
Okay, you have to cut this Collections 101 a little bit short.
Well, my point here is that you have a job to do that you've not done. And Senator Edwards is, I don't like his bill, but he would like the legislature to address this problem. Catherine and her group over there at Willamette are doing fabulous work, and you have an opportunity here to get a hold of this and actually do something to increase the collections. And I would just say that all of the collectors in the private sector collection agencies are regulated by the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and they're also regulated by the Oregon Unlawful Debt Collection Practices Act, and they must behave properly. And, you know, I find it interesting that SEIU sent a letter to support this bill, but they got their people that work for the state exempt from those laws. So, you know, I think a good start would be put those people back under the law, and then let's talk about how we best collect money up front.
Okay, well, this is definitely an area that this is not the first time the uncollected revenue has come before this committee, and I think so I think Senator Edwards is onto something, that this would be a good time, especially with the new system coming on board. This would be a good time to reevaluate what we're doing with collections, how we're doing it. Yeah. And how we can be more effective.
Okay.
Senator Hess.
I think what I heard you say was you want me on that wall, you need me on that wall, and you would prefer us to give you a simple thank you and be on our way.
Well, I want you to examine state collections and actually improve them. But that's going to take an investment to train people. And it's going to take partnerships with private sector people that actually know what they're doing. And you have to be willing to do that.
I was mostly being whimsical. So there was a movie, there was a line, and just the way you and Jack Nicholson sort of resemble
Madam Chair, Senator Haas, I appreciate that. I'm not in a whimsical mood today. So.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Committee, that completes our agenda. Paul, are you? Do we have any? Did I forget anything?
So, Madam Chair, my understanding of your direction is we will post Friday, 1 o'clock. We'll have the hearing on Senate Bill 1532, and we'll have the work session on 1534. So we'll
Correct.
Post that right away.
And stay tuned. We're not sure about 1532. We've got to get people lined up, so that may change.
Okay.
Okay. Right. With that, we are adjourned.
Well, I just
totally.